At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hey, 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 how y'all doing? It's your girl, Didi Leggett, a.k.a. The Core Queen, and I am here with episode 71 of The Core Queen Chat. And today we have an amazing, amazing woman of God on the show tonight to talk about some great things. We're going to talk, you know, we're all about healing that trauma. So we have my girl, Kimberly Johnson, coming on the show. I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about her background so that we can get into this conversation. Kimberly T. Johnson is the founder of Seat of Authority Ministries. She's an anointed leader with a heart for intercessory prayer, Bible teaching, evangelism, and healing ministry. Beginning her ministry at the age of 4, that's crazy, in song, Kimberly has faithfully served in diverse capacities, including praise and worship, leadership, women's ministry, prison outreach, and intercessory prayer. Her calling was forged through seasons of street evangelism in Chicago, ministering in women's shelters and international missions in Nigeria. Known for her uncommon faith, she carries a powerful anointing to minister healing to the mind, body, and spirit while equipping believers with kingdom strategies to strive and reign in victory. Kimberly's passion is to see souls saved, lives transformed, and the body of Christ walking in divine order and authority. Y'all welcome Kimberly to the show.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. I appreciate you more than you know, and I'm so excited to have you on the show today.
I'm excited to be here. I really am.
Yes, I think you are going to offer us so much insight, look at this, to this show and these questions that I have, and also coming from a faith-based perspective. I love it.
Thank you.
So my first question for you is, how would you define childhood trauma in the context of adult relationships?
I believe that it is the foundation of that will determine how you respond in your adult relationships. It's the foundation. That's where you are formed, the years of growth and maturity, and they impact the way that we feel, the way that we behave, the way that we respond even. Mm-hmm. And especially when it's an unresolved wound, then it can cause us to have an unhealthy place of relationship unknowingly, because mm-hmm. we're just doing what we've always done.
Right. I think I like that you said that, because I like that you didn't even like pinpoint romantic relationships, just relationships. Anytime mm-hmm. we are in relation with anyone, this is a factor.
It is a factor. It is a factor. It and a lot of times we don't even realize it, like how it affects us in our professional relationships, how it affects us in our ministry relationships, even within our family. And we already know how it hurts us in romantic relationships. So,
yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that you said like in our business relationships and things, because I remember a year ago when my grandma passed away, we had to do all this, you know, all this stuff with like the estate and all of that. Mm-hmm. And it was me, my mom, and my sister, and we're all handling things differently. And like visually seeing how my mom was traumatized as a child come to life in these situations, it was like, I don't think she even notices she's doing this. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was kind of like a defense mechanism with everything. And I'm like, Mom, it's okay. Like, they're just trying to help us. And she just always was on the defense about it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it, like her thought process just doesn't go there.
No, it's a natural response, because as a injured child, you take on the responsibility of defending yourself when the adults around you don't. Mm. So if she's, you know, done this in her adolescence, teen years, you know, young adult to, you know, a mature woman, it's second nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's second nature. Yeah. I'm not going to give you the chance to hurt me. Yeah.
Ooh, listen, been there, done that.
Yes.
So what are the most common ways that childhood trauma shows up in like dating, marriages, or long-term partnerships?
For me, what I've seen, even personally and then just in ministry with others, the first thing is mistrust. Mm. And then the unwillingness to learn how to trust.
Ooh.
The second one I would say would be like overcompensating, because, you know, you just want to either people please or prove that you're worthy or prove that you're enough. Another one that we'll see a lot is fear of abandonment. You know, we just say, oh, I like you so much. I just, you know, I'm not really clingy, but I love your vibe. I just want to be in your presence. But really, that's what it is we're afraid to be alone. We're afraid to allow that person the freedom to be in other relationships. And it's another level of control because of that fear of abandonment. And then the other one is the inability to resolve conflicts. We shut down emotionally and we just are not there.
Oh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. That is a good one. Because I know a lot of people, I've been in relationships like that where the guy would just completely shut down and just avoid the conversation at all. And they think that that's the better way to solve problems. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I have abandonment issues. So now I feel like you leaving me and you don't care about me. So now we both trauma bond and it's just a whole mess.
Yes. And then the lack of communication skills, because there's a difference between shutting down versus saying, hey, I need a few minutes to process this. I need to take a moment. There's a difference between saying, I hear you and I know you have a need, but I don't have the capacity at this moment. So let me take some time so that I can gather myself and then I can tend to you. But we don't do that. We haven't learned to do that, because remember, we're coming from a trauma childhood. Mm-hmm. Nobody said, hey, I can't take care of you at this moment because I'm fighting to take care of myself in this moment. Ooh. So how do we know to do that unless it's something that we seek out? When we look around and we finally get a glimpse of healthy relationship, mm-hmm. That's what makes you go, okay, wait a minute, hold on. You know, I guess everybody doesn't do it this way. You know, it's like, you know, when you finally start going to school, right, you just know how you fix your lunch, right? Mm-hmm. Until you see how your friends' moms and, you know, fix their lunches or how your friends fix their own lunches, you can tell who's got the loving mom because they may have the little note on the inside, mm-hmm. but you don't know that there's a difference until you're exposed to something else.
Wow. Yeah. That's funny you said that, because a lot of times you'll hear people that came from like healthy families and they were poor. They're like, well, I didn't know we were poor. Like,
absolutely.
We didn't know because they had a healthy relationship with their family and they always made sure they felt loved. So they didn't even experience that.
They didn't even know. Here we are thinking, you know, so I've heard people say that, oh, I thought we were just camping out, not even realizing the lights were out, right? And you know, but again, like you said, it's a healthy environment. It's not the, you know, the trauma that's associated with a lot of people. And then the other one, I knew it was one else, where we're just waiting for the next thing to happen.
Oh,
that was what it was. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Because you just, it's so, that's just the norm. Nothing ever works out. So I'm always think the worst. So I'm prepared.
It's going to always be something. It's going to always be something.
Yeah. That's definitely, it's crazy though. Cause like, thinking about my past relationships, none of these things connected at all for me. Like, I just thought I'm operating the way I'm supposed to operate. I don't know that there is a reason why I am this way. And also didn't think it was a problem with it. So,
right? Yeah, you never think it's a problem when it's you. Somebody else always has to, like, point it out. But you have to be willing to go back in and introspect and say, okay, wait. Is that really me or are they tripping? Because sometimes we could just go, oh, they hating, and, you know, and brush it, you know, and ignore it versus really, really taking that self accountability to say, okay, this person said it, that person said it. Okay, this person said it. Oh, it's me. I'm the common denominator. It's me.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. That's it's important. Yeah, we got to start looking at ourselves, people.
Yes.
So why is it important to address these early wounds before and during entering a relationship?
Two things that I know to be true is that hurt people will hurt other people around them. Mm-hmm. And then because we're broken, because we're wounded, if we're not healed, and especially when it's something that's still fresh for us, we'll have a tendency to bleed out those wounds on those closest to us. They're the closest to us. Mm-hmm. And so not addressing those is those things that that bleeding and that cycle of hurting those around us are the things that are detrimental to relationship, marriage, even being a parent. Not really realizing that you're parenting from your childhood trauma.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's funny you just said that because I just had my daughter on a couple episodes ago to talk about her childhood trauma and how I was a part of that and the healing process. Mm-hmm. And like, I had her at 18 years old, so I don't know that I'm bleeding on her. I didn't know that I was taking out the things that I was frustrated with and, you know, being a single mom at such a young age. I'm like, my perspective was I'm just in survival and doing whatever I can to take care of her, not realizing how much I was damaging her.
Absolutely. You were doing the best that you had, the best that you could with what you had available to you. And as most parents, even myself, that was the common thing that I would say to them. But one of the things that I did different with my children was I gave them room and opportunity to say something. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them, hey, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And there are some decisions that I make that may not work out for us. But I need you to know that I made this decision with the intention of the best outcome. Mm-hmm. But life is life. And sometimes things don't always work out the way that we intend them to. But it doesn't mean that I didn't think about what you said. I didn't hear your concerns. I made my decision because I thought this was the best for all of us. Mm. And that was the thing that I think helped them the most to be able to say, hey, Ma, you know, I don't feel like you considered us in that decision.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Yeah. And I think like my daughter said one thing that was kind of like, okay, that makes sense. After she read my book, she said, now I look at you as a human, not just a mom. Like, she was like, we don't think that our moms had lives before us. Mm-hmm. So we don't consider how they are showing up for us compared to what they went through. So it was just refreshing to hear her acknowledge that.
That's beautiful. And I said I was going to go. I saw it and it's just work has just been crazy. That is definitely on my list to go back and watch it.
And it was the toughest interview I've ever done. I was like,
I can imagine. I can imagine. I know just for me as a mom, I really wanted to break the cycle of the childhood trauma in our family. So I was very intentional to share my story with my boys. I didn't ever want them. I have three sons and I never wanted them to not know who their mom is and my struggles. They like, here is where, this is where I came from. These are some of the things that have shaped me to be who I am today. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just like being honest with them.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time and still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open and happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.
I was very protective of my children because, you know, I was not as protected as I could have been in certain areas. So them just understanding, and I would tell them, hey, it's not me not trusting you. It's really me not trusting the other people. It's not an issue with you at all. And I just remember having to like have those conversations and I would tell them, be patient. I know I'm going to have to let go. I know I'm going to have to trust you guys to make the decisions, wise decisions about who you're friends with, especially like once they start to get in their teen years, things of that nature. And, you know, the people that they engage with, the relationships that they develop, even the activities that they participate in, I had to begin to let go of some things and begin to allow them to just make those decisions that they needed to for themselves. But had I not been on that healing journey, I probably would have been fighting for control.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things a lot of our parents did was like they held us in, like they were so strict and just we didn't feel like we had a voice. It was just like we just can't wait to get out of here because I don't have no voice. I can't say nothing. I can't talk when an adult talking. Like why am I here?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes.
So, how can childhood trauma influence the type of partners that we choose?
Wow. Like it honest for me, I'll say this. My first marriage, I was married twice. I ended up finding somebody that was familiar. We normally have a pattern and a behavior and we're not even aware that that's what it is. But my first husband was older than me. My dad worked a lot. Not that he wasn't there. I grew up in a two-parent household and everything. And my dad worked a lot and he worked nights. So a lot of the times during the daytime, he would be asleep. We would be at school, things of that nature. And then by the time we were coming in from school, he's getting ready, you know, so he can head out and do his night shift thing. So our interactions was kind of, you know, few and far between for a season there. And I ended up finding a husband who was 16 years older than me. So I didn't realize it then, but I was looking for my daddy, you know, and there were similarities about him and my dad that I didn't realize either until, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Both of them full of potential, but neither of them have the desire to fulfill it. I mean, and that's something that I don't even think that even to this day, that they would be willing to admit, right? But, you know, still good people at heart, just wounded in their own ways, unresolved issues of their own that hindered them from being able to be the men that they really could have been. So I noticed that for me, I'll say my childhood trauma drew me to what I was looking for. I was looking for either what I didn't have or what was familiar. So if you gave me something, a semblance of what I thought I wanted, it may not have even been sincere, right? But if it met my emotional need, I was all in, right? And so for some of us, you know, we don't realize that it's the patterns of the behaviors, the familiarity, also the absence, the things that our hearts always longed for that we didn't have. Those are the kind of things that we'll kind of look for in a partner. But of course, because we're coming from a traumatized perspective, we're gonna identify what we're looking for in a traumatized participant, right?
That was
what I learned for myself.
That makes so much sense. I think I can relate, because I think the people that I was looking for, because my life was so chaotic, I was attracted to chaos. So that was like, if it wasn't chaotic, I'm like, oh, I don't want that. I need some entertainment. I need something that's so, always drama filled.
So for you, healthy seemed boring. You was like, nah. Really, that was what you needed. It just was not enough activity.
Right. And it seemed like, oh, you must not like me. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's wrong with you? I'm thinking something wrong with them. And it's me. And now I'm like, please give me the peace. I'll take it. Give me the boring. I'm cool with it.
I am all right with it. Yes. And you know, those are the things like what, you know, just that unhealthy attachment, right? Like you say, we end up trauma bonding and what you say, now we go together real bad. And then it's real bad because it's unhealthy. We and both
like, ain't nobody asked me nothing. We go together.
We go together real bad. You don't even know it, but I'm telling you, we go together real bad.
That's exactly what happened. That is funny. Oh my goodness. So can unresolved trauma lead to unhealthy patterns like codependency, emotional distance, or conflict avoidance?
Absolutely. Like we just talked about, that codependency, it gives us the validation that we're worthy, that the person, quote unquote, really cares for us. They love us because they want to be in our presence, right? Even though a lot of times we force them to be in our presence, right? but just really tying our worth to other people and then being available to meet their needs, even when ours isn't always being met. And then you've got the other end of it, like we talked about, the inability to deal with their emotions, right? So then you become emotionally distant. And I did this at one point in my first marriage. It was like, you know, I love you so much, but this hurts. And so emotionally, I'm going to withdraw because every time I show up, I'm getting beat up. So, I mean, just when we put it, and a lot of times, you know, like you said, when we deal with our own trauma, plus now you're dealing with a spouse who has their own trauma. And it's a difference when, like for me, I was going through my healing process and he never even acknowledged the trauma.
Wow.
I remember praying and just asking God, hey, can you show me like what this is? Because if we can like go on this path of healing together, mm-hmm. then this would be great. Like, you know, he can work through his process. I can work through mine. Like he can have his counselor if that's what he needs. And I could go and do mine. Like it was. And so I love God. He is the revealer of all truth. I believe it. Mm-hmm. And he showed me what happened to my ex-husband in a dream. And I was just like, wow, that was a lot. And it took me a while to gain the confidence to ask him, like, had those things happened to him? Mm-hmm. And it was his response to those questions that confirmed it for me, even though he denied it. Mm-hmm. I really wanted him to be healed. So I had reached out to his older brother and was like, hey, you know, is there any way, you know, as a family, we could, you know, try to help with this? And yeah. It was just like, you know, he was like, I really sympathize with you and everything. He was like, but that's something that he's going to have to.
Yep.
He's going to have to do that. And it was the wisest but most painful answer. Yeah. Because all I know is I just want him to be healed, right? Mm-hmm. I'm seeing what it's doing to him. He, you know, a good man, and just so much more could have become of him as an individual, period, right? Mm-hmm. We're not even going to talk about the husband, the father aspect of it, but just him and who he was as, or who he is as a person, because he's still mm-hmm. alive. But yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be tough. Especially, I mean, it's not like it's a boyfriend, girlfriend. This is a marriage and you're like, this is my person. Mm-hmm. I need him to be like on the same journey so we can grow together. But if yeah. they're not willing, it's really nothing you can do.
No, it wasn't. And so for him, instead of facing it head on, he turned to drugs and alcohol, and it caused him to be abusive. And one of the things I would say this to everybody, was the hardest decision I ever had to make. Was, do I stay or do I go? Because at this point, we have three African-American young men looking at this, right? And I had already purposed in my heart that the cycle stopped with me, mm-hmm. that my children would not have, you know, the years of trauma and, you know, all of mm-hmm. those things. So, you know, just me being the person of prayer that I was, just really just, God, how do I do this? Like, because marriage is forever. My mm-hmm. parents have been married 56 years. And wow. my grandparents, they were married, 40-something years before my grandfather passed away, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's in our family, marriage, and you stay. And mm-hmm. you're committed to this. This is something that you said, God, I'm going to be here through the thick and the thin. Mm-hmm. But I was like, but now it's at a point where us staying is destroying us. Hmm. And I just was like, okay, God, I know you said, you know, till death, you know, I said to you, mm-hmm. till death do us part and things of this nature, but I don't want us to die emotionally, though we're still alive physically. And that was where I said, okay, I believe that's my answer right there. God, I don't believe you want me to die. I don't believe emotionally. I don't right. believe you want our children to die emotionally. Mm-hmm. That because, and it's literally at the hand of the man that, you know, is supposed to be their father, the one who's supposed to cover and protect them, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I started working the exit plan. Mm-hmm. He realized it. Oh. It was getting to the point where we were almost about to leave. So mm-hmm. things were leaving because I was packing certain things up and putting them in storage. And, oh, I'm just organizing. I'm going through everybody's stuff, getting rid of stuff. You know how we do. Mm-hmm. And he realized that I had hid some of everybody's stuff except for his. And I was like, I'm getting to yours. I'm getting to yours. Don't worry about it. But he had put two and two together, and it made him just snap. So that ended up being the catalyst to get us out of the abusive situation. And I just thank God for doing that, because I didn't realize that they had experienced anything until after we were away. Because I did the best that I could to shield them from it. But again, I'm not 24/7. God is all knowing and all present, not me. So there were some things that I didn't see. There were some places where I was not available, and he was the one that was with them. But I just thank God that they were able to leave early. The oldest was 10 when we left, and the youngest was 3. So, yeah. But I told them, I said, my purpose is to let you guys know that there is a better way to live, that we can have a life of peace, a life of joy, and we can have fun. We can enjoy life. We're supposed to enjoy life. So I intentionally made sure that they were able to, you know, get therapy and talk about the things that they needed. Till they was just like, yeah, we good.
Yeah, that's good. I commend you for leaving, because some people wouldn't have had the strength or the courage to leave, especially with 3 boys.
Yes. I promise it was the hardest thing I ever had to do, because I love my husband. Like, I didn't leave him because I didn't love him. I left him because I really wanted to save our sons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You made the right choice.
I did. And I thank God for it. When I see the handsome and productive young men that they are, I'm grateful. I am grateful. The oldest is 25, and the middle one, he'll be 21 this year. And the baby just graduated from high school.
Okay. He's
18. So they're, you know, going on to their paths and living life, and they are doing well.
Look at God.
He is good.
Yes, he is good. That was a testimony right there. And there's a woman listening right now who needed to hear that, who probably doesn't have the courage or the strength to leave. And maybe that will give her a little boost to know that everything will be okay.
I hope so. It will, friend. It will.
Yes, indeed. It always gets better.
It does. It does. Contrary to what we would say in our place of hurt. Like, you know, it's always going to be like this. No, it is not. I'm a witness. Life gets better.
Yes, it does. It really does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't let social media fool y'all. I'm telling you, it gets better.
It does.
Okay, so can trauma create unrealistic expectations or fears within a relationship?
Yes. Yes. I found myself, and this I just can only tell on me, expecting other people to make.
Uh-oh. What happened?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I found myself expecting other people to make up for all of the stuff that I lost or didn't have, right? All the things that I didn't experience. I put that pressure, especially in a romantic relationships, for them to, you got to make up for all of it. Like, I need you to be the fulfillment of everything that I've ever needed. And I had to realize I had to get that in my relationship with Christ. I had to get that from him.
That's interesting, because we hear, especially from men, they always say, I need her to be my peace.
No,
I'm going to need you to be peaceful before you get over here.
Yes. Yeah, just like happiness is something that's within you, so is your peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you don't have peace within yourself, you're not going to have peace in any other capacity. And the foundation of peace is order.
Mm.
If you don't have order in your heart, if you don't have order in your mind, if you don't have order in your spirit, man, then there will not be any peace.
Mm. And that's a word right there.
I think we said that earlier, that in my prayer time, one of the revelations that I received from God was that the direct opposite of peace is chaos.
Mm.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the direct opposite of chaos is order. I said order. It back.
Yeah.
It's the order. Mm-hmm. So when we have the order, chaos cannot function.
Yep. There you go.
It cannot function. And so where there's order, there's no chaos, and there is peace.
Absolutely. And it's just ironic that a lot of times when people say that they need their woman to bring peace, for some reason, they bring the most chaos to the situation. It's like, how can somebody be peaceful when everything's out of order? Like, you're supposed to be the man. You're supposed to lead. We need you to go first. So you come first with peace. You come first with order, and then everything else will fall in line.
So I'm going to say this and I'm going to say it confidently and boldly because I'm a boy mom. And I know that one of the things that I've done for my sons is to be a place of comfort, to be a place of soothing. And so when they say they have that expectation of their woman to be that peaceful place for them, they really are wanting their significant others to be their mom. And you can be mad at me all you want to, but we're just going to say it like it is. And I believe it was Wellington Boone years ago wrote a book that says, your wife is not your mother.
Mm. Showing.
It's another book that I want to shout out by Gordon McDonald, and it's called Ordering Your Personal World. It really helps those two books, I would say that, especially for men, understanding you're looking for things from your spouse that you got from your mom. I told my boys this. I said, I need you to understand that I do everything that I do for you because I want you to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But any woman who wants to be with you, she's doing it because she wants to benefit from it.
What?
There's a difference. There's a difference. I don't have to do anything. You don't have to come back and do anything for me. I'm fulfilled in seeing you successful.
Mm-hmm.
But that woman at your side, trust me, she doing it because she want to partake.
Well, y'all better listen. Take notes. Y'all better take.
Yes.
Right, can you put some of the comments up on the screen? Because I know the people in they over there in the amen corner over here. Let me see what they talking about. Jen said, don't bring Iraq over here. Better have your own peace.
I know that's right.
CT Kirk said, that's powerful. He has to want it for himself.
Yes.
Jen said, mom, that's a heck to the NO for me. Yeah. I'm not about to be nobody's mama. I'm sorry. I got my own kids. I can't help you, sir.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I can be your help me. I can be your partner. I can be your person, but I cannot be your mama. She is who she is, and I am who I am.
There you go.
Two totally different women with two totally different roles and everything. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Look, that sign, sealed, and delivered from a bona fide boy mom, okay?
Yes.
So how do triggers from childhood affect conflict resolution between partners?
I feel like, I don't want to say,
did we lose her? She froze. Yeah. Go further up. Let me see what C.T. Kirk said something else earlier. He said, oh, yes, definitely cycle breakers. And that's great for my book, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to break cycles in every which way that we can. Yeah. Is she back? I think she's back.
Okay.
Okay, there you go.
Awesome. All right. Ask me the question again. I'm sorry. I was so busy trying to get back on.
Okay. How do triggers from childhood affect conflict resolution between partners?
Wow. I think the biggest way it can affect the conflict resolution is depending on what that trigger is. Like, I'll just say an argument, right? Mm-hmm. If that elevated voice puts you in that moment as a child, right? Now you're responding the way you find yourself responding the way that you did as a child when the yelling and the screaming and all those things happen to you. So it can cause you to literally react from that very place of hurt, from that very place of trauma. Like we talked about earlier, when you said you were doing the paperwork and everything, and you realized somebody was responding a certain way, mm-hmm. but once you understood that source, you didn't realize that that person had been going through this their whole life, right? Yeah. And so it's just second nature. And a lot of times we don't realize that because we haven't healed, we never gave ourselves the opportunity to unlearn those bad behaviors. And then, well, I won't say bad, but those negative behaviors, right? Mm. And then replace them with the positive ones. So communicating is key. Right. If you've mm-hmm. never been given the power to communicate mm-hmm. in an elevated situation, you don't know how to de-escalate it. Mm. So you go back to what you know. Either I'm going to retreat or I'm coming out guns blazing. It depends on the person. Yep. And so it can, you know, a small disagreement can blow up, you know, into World War III now because, you know, that person didn't know how to communicate. They didn't know how to say, you know what, you're making me feel like I have to defend myself. Mm. Don't like this tone. It puts me in an unhealthy place for the both of us. Mm. And we've got to learn how to express and communicate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's funny because I have this conversation often when it comes to women who are raised without dads. Mm-hmm. And then they get into a relationship and the man that they're with have their best interest at heart. Mm-hmm. And they're telling them something that they probably need to hear, maybe some type of correction or something in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I try to explain, like, I didn't know how to accept that because I never had a dad talk to me at all. So for you to come to me in what I perceive as a negative way, it's going to put me on the defense automatically because absolutely. I've never had a man correcting me and be well-intended.
Absolutely. So it was two things going there. It was the rebellion of authority, right? Mm-hmm. And then also the need to feel like, hey, I have to defend myself from you because I don't trust you, mm-hmm. man. You're the one that hurt me. So even though you're saying something that you quote unquote believe is good for me, I can't trust your source.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of times I hear, well, Black women are so combative. No, we've never been taught how to not be combative when it comes to this type of engagement. We don't know how to do it.
I'm going to say this. I'm not combative unless you put me in a situation where I'm not being heard and I feel like I have to defend myself or I believe that I have to defend myself.
Yeah.
First thing first, if you let me know that you hear what I'm saying, then I don't have to keep repeating it, or now I don't have to become emphatic or passionate, right? Mm-hmm. in my communication methods or levels with you, because when I said it in my calm voice, you heard me. Or the way that you're communicating with me is elevated. It's aggressive, right? Mm-hmm. And whether I've shared that with you or not, what my trauma is, it's still a trigger for me, right? Mm-hmm. So if you respond that way and these are the elements around me, right? I'm not being heard. Now you're aggressive. I feel like I'm going to defend myself. I'm mm-hmm. going to take full accountability of self-defense at that point. And my whole mm-hmm. posture and disposition is going to be that of self-defense. And mm-hmm. so we have a lot of, I hate to say it, Black women, I believe, are some of the less respected, least respected, the least heard. And it's always some kind of way how things are manipulated or misconstrued to be our fault. It's not on us. Everything is not on us, especially when the family unit is husband, wife, father, mother. If we're a team, then we share responsibility in the breakdown. But absolutely. A lot of times we won't take accountability. We're too busy pointing the finger. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault.
Yep. You can put up Jen's comment. Jen said the tone and intent most definitely matter, but the receiver must be receptive to listen as well, so long as the message is delivered in a respectful way. Absolutely. I repeat, I think Charlamagne the God says this all the time. He says honesty without empathy is brutality.
Yes.
Like you can't just, like I can't go talk to a man any kind of way and he just accepts it. So why do you think I'm supposed to do that?
Absolutely.
I'm like, no, just, it's so simple to communicate with somebody. If you mean me well, it shouldn't come off as aggressive. It shouldn't come off as mean.
Absolutely. It's not always what you say, it's how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you say it.
And a lot of men always push back when I say that. And they're like, no, y'all shouldn't be so soft. You should just take it. Well, I'm not built like you. God created exactly. me this way on purpose.
Guess what? And you shouldn't be so hard. How about that? Yeah. It's okay for you to feel. It's okay yeah. for you to express your emotions as well. So exactly. I need you to come out of that. You know, you have to hold on to everything. Break those barrier downs. Like your feelings don't matter. Your feelings matter. Your yep. mental health matters. So yep. no, I'm not too soft. And you're too hard. It's okay yeah. with being firm. It's okay with being masculine, but you should still be able to express your thoughts. You mm-hmm. should still be able to express your emotions. You should be able to communicate your needs and the things that you want in relationship. And you shouldn't have to hide those things. You shouldn't have yep. to, you know what I mean?
And, exactly.
Yeah.
And your tone shouldn't be this aggressive tone unless there's a life or death situation. If it's something like, let's go, I need you to get out, somebody's shooting, that's one thing. But if yeah. we at the house is having a conversation, relax. Like, you don't have to talk.
It's not like, I'm right here. You're right there. Why are you yelling at me? I hear very well.
Exactly. Can you put up Jen's comment? What she say? In my Lauryn Hill voice, it could all just be so simple. Yep.
Yeah.
We'd rather make hard. Humans make everything hard.
I know.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, we got to work on this communication. And I actually just had a conversation today about how I am. And they were like, well, you're just so sensitive. You're so fragile. So I have to be careful what I say. No, maybe you should just be careful what you say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
is it me or is it you? Because why do you feel like you have to walk on eggshells around me? It's something within you. If you're not comfortable and confident enough to say that you're uncomfortable or you feel or think a certain way, you should be able to express your opinions, especially if we're in healthy relationship, whether it's work or personal.
Mm-hmm. And that was kind of my response. It was like, no, I'm not like this with anybody but you, because you make me feel unsafe.
There you go. Absolutely.
In what ways can trauma from one or both partners strain a marriage?
Wow. First things first, you know, nobody, it's the trust issues. It's the lack of like really relating to one another. I think, you know, what to say, when you're in the trenches and you side by side with somebody, right? You fighting for y'all lives, right? But you end up creating that trauma bond, even though y'all really so busy fighting for your lives that you can't tend to one another. So you're only bonded by the trauma, but the true relational connection is not there. You end up dealing with a whole bunch of power struggles because everybody wants control. Nobody wants to trust, right? And then, you know, you've got that cycle that continues to happen. It's the hurting, continuing to hurt, whether it's repetitive cheating and things of that nature, because, you know, you just can't be resolved, or she, whoever it is, you know, is not at peace within themselves to tackle whatever needs to be tackled in a relationship. They go outward instead of concentrating on what's right in front of them. So those are some of the things that can affect and really put strain on a marriage. Finances, because you know, it was a season where I shopped for therapy.
Oh, I thought you was going to say shopped. Because, see, that was my me projecting. My bad.
What you going to say?
I thought you was going to say shopping. Like, just shop. I got to work on that.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yes, I shopped.
Oh, that was your therapy.
Yes, that was my therapy. Yes. And honestly, I'm telling the truth. I have to make sure I check myself. Like, if I put something in a basket, I let it sit there for a while instead of just hurrying up and pushing it through. Because why am I really going to do? I need this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm.
And if I don't, it's been in there for a week or so. I really don't need it. I just wanted it in that moment because I was like, ooh, right? Yep. Then I just go ahead and delete it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really put it in the basket. That was enough.
Yes, absolutely. That's a big one right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. I said all that because it affects the finances, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you always got, I laugh, you know, when I see it on social media. Right. Because she got packages going to mama house, right? But, you know, that's an issue. That's an issue. We need to look at that. Why?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you put up Jen's comment? Jen says it's the dopamine of, I can't see what that emoji. Oh, of shopping, because I'm still a work in progress. He ain't done with me yet.
I'm telling you, even once you get after you get over the hump, you still gonna have to hold yourself accountable. That part does not end. It does not, especially when everywhere you go is, ooh, see this shiny new toy. Ooh, girl, this makeup do this. Yeah. Look at my outfit. It's everywhere you look, somebody's selling something. So
yes,
it's so easy to just get caught up in that buy, and not even realize, you know what? I didn't even decompress from my day. I didn't even, and I just got on here and now I'm just throwing stuff in a cart.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true. That is so true. Wow. The things we use to cope.
Ooh. Yes.
Oh man, okay, this one. How does unhealed trauma affect intimacy and emotional connection?
Severely. I believe it eats away at the intimacy and emotional connection. First of all, intimacy is not just physical, right? Mm-hmm. Intimacy is being in a place where I can bear all of who I am and you can bear all of who you are. and I love you and you love me, mm-hmm. despite the flaws, the imperfections, all of this stuff. But I just love you because you're D and you love me because I'm Kim, right? Mm-hmm. But when there's unhealed trauma, there's an unwillingness to bear everything. Because we're still hiding. There's still shame. There's still, you know, oh, I'm not worthy. And girl, you can't see that. I can't, because you're going to judge me and all that other stuff. I remember getting to that point where I just decided, you know what? I can't live being worried about what somebody else thinks about me. Either you love me or you don't. Either I'm your cup of tea or I'm not. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay, because I realize there are some people who just are not for me. And it's okay. They're still a good person. It doesn't take away from their value that we're not compatible. And it just, if we're unhealed, then are we really being intimate in any of our relationships? Ooh. And my answer is no. Ooh. Like, I thought I knew my husband. I didn't. I didn't. There was so much that he withheld because he was fearful. He was fearful. There was a season in our marriage where he was sober. And he enjoyed it. We were very good and thrived as a family. But because he could not project or discern what was coming ahead, it was unfamiliar, and he no longer wanted to participate in it. Like you said, if it was healthy, you saw it as boring. There wasn't enough chaos and activity going on. He was not comfortable with the normalcy of the life that we were living at that point. And he was like, hey, I was happy that he said it, because, you know, he was like, I don't know how long I can stay on this path of sobriety. Yeah. And he was honest. He was like, you know, I know that life. Know this one. And I was like, wow. Like, it really, it blew my mind. I was grateful that he was comfortable enough at that point to communicate. And I thank God that he allowed me to be that safe place for him. And I had earned his trust, right? So he would open up to a certain extent. But in my understanding, it just did not compute. And so the only thing I said to him was, I'm going to try to stay along and around as long as I can. But I can't tell you that that's the kind of life that I want for us. So how can two walk together unless they be agreed? Now we don't agree.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's vulnerable right there.
Yes, it was.
You bared it. And a lot of people don't get that. They'll get the behavior behind it. And you're trying to figure out what happened.
Right. And one of the things that I was careful in that moment was to not, how it was hard for me to understand it. I knew enough not to communicate and be like, that just don't make sense. You know? That don't even make sense. You know how stupid that sounds? Like,
right.
I knew not to respond like that. And the only thing I did say was, I'm not sure how long I can hang in there with you. That was the only thing I knew to say. And we were actually driving on the road. So, like, it ended up being just this long silence after that, because he was thinking and I'm thinking, and I'm just like, God, I need you on this one. Right. I need grace. I need strength. Like, whoo, Lord, this is a lot.
That is a lot. And it's funny, because a lot of men will, they always say that they can't be vulnerable with women because they feel like they're going to use it against them or they're going to judge them or something like that. So for him to even voice it, that's like, oh, what do I do with this? I wasn't ready.
I wasn't. But I knew that it was so much that had gotten us to that point. This was coming towards the, because it was 13 years of marriage. So we're coming towards the end where it just starts to unravel. But that was work. That was time. That was being intentional. Ooh. That was showing up for him, even though he wasn't showing up for me. That was me not being angry, and I was forgiving. Right. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stay in that place of anger and bitterness or unforgiveness because I still had to do my work as a wife, regardless if he was doing his as a husband. That's marriage, right? Yeah. That's commitment. I still showed up even though he didn't. And I think it's the hard place, and I'm healing on my own journey. I was not there yet. I'm still healing. But it was hard. It was not easy. It was a lot of prayer, a lot of crying out, just Lord help, because I cannot do this in Kim. Like I need your super on my natural, because this is a lot.
Yeah. Ooh. That is a lot. Mm-hmm. But look at you now.
Yes. His glory. It is to his glory. I promise.
Absolutely. So what advice would you give to someone who recognizes their childhood is affecting their marriage, but doesn't know where to start?
Just start. Don't try to figure it out. Just start. Because hesitation and delay has happened long enough. So the place that sticks out the most, that's where you start. The area that influences you the most, the place that gives you the most problem, that's where you start. That's where you start.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Start. Just start. It don't matter what. Just start. Get on the journey. And it's okay to get professional help. I will say this, being a part of the church, being a Christian, I'll just say it, organized religion, right? A lot of times, and it's changing over the years. I think it's more acceptable now. Now, if we could just get past the cultural barriers of, African Americans going and getting that, mental health help and going in to talk to psychiatrists or counselors or psychologists, if that's what we need, but just not being afraid to go get what you need.
Yes.
And I equate it to, if you're hungry and there's food in the refrigerator, you don't hesitate to get up and go get what you need to feed your physical body. The same urgency and the same intentionality that you have to feed your body is the same intentionality that you need to have to take care of your mental, your emotional. It should be the same drive. It is just as important. And then on top of that is the spiritual aspect of it. Whatever your faith is, whoever you believe in, I know who I believe in, but whoever you believe in, whatever. And if you're seeking, go to that place. I believe in Jesus. I'm not going to tell nobody that's who they have to believe in, right? But he was very instrumental in my healing and my faith. So, and I will say I was blessed at times when I needed it. God allowed me to have the faith-based community. And it helped me. It helped me. Now, it's a whole nother subject, but there were some setbacks. But when I really, really needed it, God allowed there to be a faith-based community that helped me in my healing. Yes.
Okay.
So start. Just start.
Yes. That was good. I like that. Mm-hmm. Great advice. What's one powerful mindset shift that can help someone break the cycle of childhood trauma in their relationships?
Releasing the what could have beens. Releasing it. One of the most powerful things that I had to do for me was grieving for the parents that I always longed for. And developing the respect for the parents that I had.
Wow.
Yeah. Not that they were bad. Remember, I grew up in a two-parent household, right? Mm-hmm. But they were parenting from their unhealed places, right? They were parenting from their trauma. And so, you know, the generation before us, you know, they didn't talk about it. It was just, you know, you hush and you keep going.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So they did the best really with the capacity that they had available. And so I really had to go in, and because I, even in my adulthood, was longing for certain things that they just did not have the capacity to give me. So I grieved. I grieve for my parents who are still alive, and it sounds so crazy, but letting go of the place of hurt, letting go of the places of inadequacy, the things that you didn't get, and longing for those things to be what they will never be. And that's difficult. Like, especially when you're a hopeful person, right? You're trying to find a place of positive outcomes, right? But the only way to get that is to see them for who they really are.
Absolutely.
Instead of projecting on them behaviors that they can never be. They can't function in them because they are not healed. So I had to love my mom and my dad in their hurt. I had to forgive them for all of the places that they didn't meet the needs for me, right? What I needed emotionally, you know, whether it was they were too busy, just didn't know. I mean, you know, because parenting is different from generation to generation. There's a different level of awareness, right? Even from us to our parents, I mean, to our children, we are parenting different than how we were parented. So just understanding that, you know, you gotta let go. You gotta let go. And you have to forgive. You have to forgive. You cannot stay in that place. It's the past, but you're still here. And there's so much more for you to experience, but you can't if you're still holding on to what's it's gone.
Yeah. Gotta let it go.
Just an analogy that I can think of, like, really quickly is, you know, when you're driving, right? You've got the big front window and then you got the small rear view mirror. Right. And our focus is on what's in front of us as we look out of that big window in front of us, because we got to see where we're going. Is our turn coming up? Or is it another car trying to, you know what I mean? It's so many other things that you have to pay attention to, that when you do check your rearview mirror, you're checking to see what's going on behind you, but you don't stay there. You glance for a couple of seconds, right? But then you're back on what's in front of you, because you go, oh, wow, look at all of that that I passed behind me, but I'm still moving forward. It's a place, a point of reference, but it's not a place for us to stay. And so You got to come out of the past.
Yes.
How do you come out of the past?
Absolutely. Fred, can you put Jen's, the first comment Jen made up there? Jensen, unfortunately, some in the church say just pray and frown upon getting professional help. I most definitely believe in prayer. However, God also gives us resources to use in addition to prayer. And one of those is therapy. Amen. I agree. Yes, Lord.
I agree. And it does not take away from the power of God. It does not take away from your faith or any of those things. I believe that it works in tandem.
Mm-hmm.
It works in tandem.
Absolutely.
Especially because the church for generations has only dealt with the spiritual side. But I need a place where I can deal with my emotional, you know, and think about it. I mean, just the truth of the matter is it's now people are being open and transparent in ministry and they're talking about the things. But for generations, it was held. It was withheld. You know, all kind of stuff was going on in the church, but nobody talked about it. It was never brought to the forefront. And again, how our trauma shows up for us in the different areas in our relationship. And so we brought our trauma to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And for generations, we were not able to minister to people effectively because we were hurt.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I agree. What's the next one that Jen said? She said, this is my parent's household, story. My goodness, thank God for grace and forgiveness.
Amen. Lord,
listen.
Yes.
Oh boy. Child, we listen. Ooh, them parents are something else.
It is. They are. I mean, and you know, we really have to be intentional on how we show up for them, especially in their later years. Like, do we find ourselves treating them? And I don't want to say out of spite, but sometimes it could be if you're not healed, right? Now you're doing the things to them that they did to you, and nobody gets what they needed. Like that cycle still goes on, even in their senior years and your adulthood. Like, it's gotta stop.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gotta stop.
Mm-hmm. I had to realize that, like you said, like I'm not gonna have the parents that I yearn for. Like, it's just that's just not the cards I was dealt.
Nope.
And I came to the conclusion, like, okay, I know this is how my mom is. I meet her where she is, and that's just like that's just what it is. And of course, writing this book was a pain point for her. And right now she's not speaking to me, but I mean, there's really nothing I can do about that. I've done my part.
Absolutely. And,
I mean, I don't have any regrets at all from writing the book, and I'm not responsible for how she reacts to it either. So,
no. And her healing journey is her own healing journey. Like, you can influence it, but at the end of the day, she's responsible for that journey herself. And like my mom and I, we do well. I just remember, like, there was a point where I was like, you know, encouraging her, kind of like giving her those nudges, like, come on, because like, you got to address this. You can't be in your seniors still hurting from your childhood.
Right.
That's not good. And I'm just grateful, excuse me, that she listened.
Mm.
Like my dad, not so much, but you know, he feels like, hey, I work. I took care of my kids. I got productive members of society and I did my job. That's good enough. I'm not, hey, that man's going to be 81 years old. If you just, that's on him. That's, you know what I mean? But he lived his life. He made his choices and I just love him through it. That's it.
Yeah. Can you put Ramona's comment up? The last one. You are only responsible for your own healing.
Amen.
And that's it.
That's it.
You try to take on anybody else's, it's just, that's just going to start the trauma all over again.
Yes. And you're putting unnecessary stress and drama on yourself. Like, you can't want it Well, you can. Let's just say it this way. It doesn't benefit you when you pursue somebody else's healing more fervently than they are for themselves.
Yeah.
At a point you have to realize, okay, I want this. They don't want this. It's just like trying to feed a baby food that they don't want to eat. They gonna keep turning their head till they get to the point where they swat that spoon away. You know, I don't want that. And we just got, we got to take the signals. They didn't turn their head. Okay, that baby don't like that. Let me just, we gonna leave this alone.
Leave it where it's at.
Yes.
Okay, so what final message would you like listeners to take away about love after trauma?
Love after trauma. It requires being intentional. It requires forgiveness. It requires healing. Like, you can't show up for anyone else where you're not willing to show up for yourself. So the first place of love after trauma is loving yourself enough to be better.
Ooh, yes, indeed.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, my final two questions, I ask every guest the same last two questions. So the first one is, what is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received was from my grandfather. And he said, don't just listen to what people say, but watch what they do. And he was specifically speaking about men in relationships. If a man love you, if he care about you, if he want you, he gonna show you. He gonna do everything in his power to show up for you. Yep. And if he, all he giving you is lip service, he don't want you. He just want what you got.
Come on, granddaddy. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, your actions speak so loud, I can't hear a word you saying.
Exactly. I don't hear nothing. I'm deaf. I need to see it.
Absolutely.
Last question. What advice would you give 15-year-old Kim?
Don't give up on love. And that's in all totality of love. Don't give up on loving yourself and don't give up on loving those around you. It might hurt, but you'll thank yourself later.
That is good. Kim, you are a phenomenal woman. You are a gem. You are awesome. You are just gold. I appreciate you for coming on the show and dropping all of this knowledge. Now, if you want to tell people how they can follow you, if you have anything you want to promote, you have the floor. You can say what you want.
Wow. Well, I am the founder of Seat of Authority Ministries. You can find us at seatofauthority.org. I also have a YouTube channel, Seat of Authority, and I'm building my little TikTok. I do have a Facebook page, but we do Bible study on Tuesdays and prayer on Friday evenings. So that's it at Seat of Authority. And you can tune in, you can watch some of the old videos that are there on the channel.
Good stuff. Seat of Authority. Y'all make sure y'all check Kim out. She is powerful. She is shifting atmospheres and shifting lives. Yes. Y'all know who I am. I'm Dee Dee Leggett, a.k.a. the Core Queen. We're here live every Wednesday, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. Please make sure you watch us on YouTube. If you're watching right now on Facebook, go over to YouTube, leave a comment on this video, like it, share it, tell your people about this episode 71. And season 3, it was an amazing episode with the phenomenal Kim Johnson. Y'all know what to do. I need y'all to like the page, subscribe to the page, turn on your notifications so you know when we're live. You can find me on all social media platforms, Dee Dee Leggett or The Core Queen. Yes, I'm a fitness coach. If you need a coach, personal trainer, nutritionist, holler at your girl. I got you. I will hook you up and get your life back on track. Also, August 23rd, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in my hometown, Bristol, Pennsylvania, is my third annual Back to School Bash in honor of my grandmother, Evelyn Joyce Leggett. It is Evelyn Joy's community outreach. It's our third annual Back to School Bash. Y'all please bring the kids out there. We are going to have a great time like we do every year. I have the horses coming out for the kids to ride, the bouncy houses. We're going to play some games so the kids can get active out there, some kickball, some dodgeball, tug of war. Get them outside off of those electronics. We're going to probably play some double dust because y'all know I like to jump. And also we're going to have the phenomenal little young girls of the Dancing Dolls of Bristol. They're going to come out and buck and show us how they do it in Bristol with the dance team. So y'all please bring the kids out. We're going to have a great time like we do every year. We give out book bags, school supplies, and they all get a free meal. And hopefully some of our sponsors will be there so that you can thank them in person. And anybody who sponsored or donated, I really appreciate y'all from the bottom of my heart. And I will see y'all on Saturday, August 23rd, my hometown, Bristol, Pennsylvania, at Marie Lowe Park in the terrace where I grew up. Y'all, please come back next week and tune in with me. We got a great guest coming on. And we'll see y'all next week, 8:30, same time, same place. Bye. Awesome.